Hey there, fiends, it's me, Tomb Dragomir, here with another classic Runorg Radio episode broadcasted from the vaults. Let's open it up. Indeed, my fiends, from December 4th, 2009, that sounds fine. It's Roger Corman, Power Man, 5,000 plus tons more fun to come on this classic Runorg Radio broadcast.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Here we go.
Stay tuned for Phantom Whisperer, followed by Supernatural Guys at 10. Then for adults only from 1 until 5, it's Erectoplasm 4. I think someone's gonna get fucked.
So, which one do you want?
It just doesn't seem right. This one's so much bigger. How can they really be the same price?
Oh, this is just a dream, isn't it? You got it.
I want to go to there.
Have a Mary. No, I can't have a Mary. Oh, I can't have a Merry Christmas without you.
Do ghosts fart? Yes. They can snore, they can fart. That was a ghost.
Creep Show.
Believe in the boogeyman.
Runorg Radio, the world's original all horror broadcast.
Where strange, incredulous molecular mutation incites cadavers to arise live.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, fiends. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to the freakiest, craziest, all-horror broadcast. Sadly, our final show of the year. Yeah, hey man, that's alright, I'm here. I'm your host, Tomb Dragomir.
Here's to another lousy millennium.
This week on the broadcast.
It's always a dark corridor. It's always at night. There's thunder, lightning, cobwebs, rats running through the corridor. At the end of the corridor was a door, and behind the door was something terrible but important for him to find out.
A legend of low-budget horror and the King of the Bees, Roger Corman, joins us. Along came a spider and the blood-spattered Geiger as Lisa spins the web with Power Man 5000. And the caustic critics are taking on Walt Disney's A Christmas Carol.
Say what?
Humbug.
Doop, boop, doop, ooh, spooky tunes on route this week. Fiends from King Diamond, we got Wall of Voodoo, some residents, Peter Gabriel, plus tons more fun to come on your home for horror, rot, and roll room org. So stay tuned.
Or what? You'll eat the dogs or the bees? Or the dogs with bees in their mouth, and when they bark, they shoot bees at you?
Here's Devil's Hot Rod, Hell Again. Hey ho, let's go!
Everything my soul on a Friday night. I was in the day, we were feeling all right down the road. Everything my soul on a Friday night.
Alaric de Manac, you are about to hear of all your evil crimes for which the just tribunal of Carcassonne has condemned you. You have drunk human blood. Of both the living and the dead, you have eaten flesh. Also, you have celebrated the Black Mass with bloody sacrifices of the newborn and of young girls. You have adored Satan and are followers of his Sabbath. You are vampires and lycanthropes. For this you will be beheaded, and your head and body will be buried in different places, so that never again will they be joined.
I put a curse on you, Armand de Marnac, my despicable brother, and on you, André Roland, and on all your descendants. You will pay, for I shall be back. I'll be back.
Everybody, Tomb Dragomir Brockman here with another late-breaking death break.
Death is on its way. Beware.
That's right. Paul Naschy, a.k.a. Jacinto Molina, has passed away at his home in Madrid after a year-long battle with cancer. The infamous actor, writer, director, producer starred in a veritable slew of low-budget Spanish horror flicks through the years. Most notably, Horror Rises from the Tomb, Mark of the Wolfman, and Hunchback of the Morgue.
The Hunchback of the Morgue, a freak of nature, a slave with a body broken from torture, a maniac with crimes beyond your wildest terrors.
So there it is Jacinto Molina Palmashi, the great hero of horror, dead at the age of 75, fiends. He'll be back. He'll be back.
Hi, I'm Peter Spierig.
I'm Michael Spierig.
I'm Steve Boyle from Daybreakers.
And you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
Wow, unison. Hey, nice. All right, here's a spooky little scene from Peter Gabriel. It's The Intruder, as we intrude you on Rue Morgue Radio. Oh, stay tuned. Roger Corman is coming up.
Possessed by love. A man obsessed by terror. Only Edgar Allan Poe, who knew intimately the tortures of madness, could create such ever-increasing suspense. only an artist of unique talent and unusual sensitivity could live so demanding a role, believing he is destined to be buried alive.
Just stop the f***ing spitting.
Alright, so first of all, what is the state of the Church of Satan?
I was going to ask you about Wes Craven, and now I'm ashamed to.
Les Messman style.
Possibly the Antichrist.
Like a zombie character on Sesame Street. All of a sudden, it seems so irrelevant. Continue.
I speak nothing but the fucking English language. And if that's infamous, then
tough titters.
All right, this is feedback with my last interview of not only 2009, but of the entire decade, the decade of the zeros. And I think zeros is a fitting way to remember the past decade.
Boring, boring, boring.
But we're going out on a high note with none other than legendary film producer and director Roger Corman. Mr. Corman recently received an honorary Academy Award for his outstanding and unparalleled career in motion pictures, arguably one of the most influential figures in American cinema, especially with regard to the enormous number of major careers he helped to launch. As Joe Dante once said, if Roger Corman didn't exist, he would have to be invented. So without further ado,
what a do?
Still going strong at the age of 83, the king of the bees, Mr. Roger Corman. Now, when I say king of the bees, I know bee movies is a term that you've often balked at. Can you explain why?
Yes, I was once on a national television show when the host talked to me about being king of the bee movies, and I said, I've never made a bee movie in my life. He was totally stopped. He had nothing to say for a few seconds, and then he asked me to explain. The explanation is this. During the 1930s, because of the Depression, the motion picture producers decided to send out two pictures for the price of one, feeling they would draw more people in, and they did. They would, at the beginning of the year, schedule their A-list, which would be the feature film, with their major stars, writers, directors, producers, and so forth, and they would have their B-list. The B-list would be the second feature, which would have less experienced people, particularly actors, either actors who were stars were slightly fading or young actors on the way up. Well, when television came in, this situation stopped and they no longer made B movies. They just had their A list. And when I started making pictures in the late 1950s, there were no more B pictures as such. So therefore, I've never made a B picture. But on the other hand, I have to admit that today people refer to low-budget films as B pictures. But technically, that's not right.
The patient came to me with a large hole in his abdomen caused by a fire poker used on him by his wife. He almost bled to death and gangrene had set in. I didn't give him much of a chance. There were other complications. The man had cancer, tuberculosis, leprosy, and a touch of the grip. I decided to operate.
My patient just left. You could come in now.
Oh, goody.
I want to ask you about a trio of movies you did early on in your career. I grew up in the 80s with Little Shop of Horrors, the musical movie adaptation, which I loved. I saw it a number of times in the cinema. It was only years later that I discovered the original, which I was surprised to find is far more perverse and demented than the musical version.
I'd almost rather go to the dentist than anywhere, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Now, no Novocaine. It dulls the senses.
This is gonna hurt you more than it is me.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes. Oh, my God, don't stop now!
This film belongs to a set of films written by Charles B. Griffith, Chuck Griffith, who wrote these crazy, outlandish comedies like Book of the Blood, Creature from the Haunted Sea. So I guess my question is, what was wrong with Charles Griffith?
Well,
was he a mental case?
Close. Chuck Griffith was very intelligent, very creative, and fairly wild. And I was a milder version of that wildness. And what had happened on those three films, Bucket of Blood was shot in 5 days, 1 week. A Little Shop of Horrors was shot in 2 days and a night. And Creature from the Haunted Sea was shot in a week. What had happened, I'm a strong believer in sneak previews before you actually send your theater picture out. I think you better show it to an audience because you never know. And you might want to make some cuts. The major studios will actually very often go back and reshoot heavily. We never had the money for that. What we did, we would just cut anything that maybe got a bad laugh or didn't play well. We never reshot, but we felt those sneak previews were important. At the sneak preview on The Premature Burial, Ray Milland was playing the lead, and I set up a horror sequence with sort of the usual technique I worked with. Ray is walking along the dark corridor. It's always a dark corridor. It's always at night. There's thunder, lightning, cobwebs, rats running through the corridor. And he knew that at the end of the corridor was a door, and behind the door was something terrible but important for him to find out. And the idea of setting all these shots up was to build, with the music and with the sound effects, to build suspense with the audience. So the audience is torn between two things. They're saying to themselves, on behalf of Ray, go down that corridor, no matter what the terror is, you must go there and open that door. At the same time, they're saying, get the hell out of this house right now. Save yourself. And the thing built perfectly. And I could feel the suspense building. When I had it set up so that when the door opened, it was significant. There was a rocking chair that worked into the story. I had it up high. The door opened. The rocking chair fell straight out into Ray's face, at which point the camera zoomed in fast and the sound and music hit. It worked perfectly. The audience screamed in horror when that shot happened. I thought, boy, I really pulled this one off. And then they laughed. And I thought, what did I do wrong? And I thought about it, and I thought, I didn't do anything wrong. The scene played perfectly, but after the scream, they felt the need to release it with a little bit of a laugh. It wasn't a big laugh, a little bit of laughter, and also a little acknowledgement that they'd been had, that if you know what I mean. So from that point on, I got the idea that horror worked with comedy. And this led to the three pictures with Chuck Griffith. The first one was Bucket of Blood, which was a horror comedy. The second one was Little Shop of Horrors, which, if Bucket of Blood was a horror comedy, Little Shop of Horrors was a comedy horror. I started playing more for comedy. And Creature from the Haunted Sea also was, I happened to be in Puerto Rico, and I was shooting two pictures in order to amortize the cost of travel. And at the beginning of shooting the second picture, I thought, why not shoot a third picture?
How much Jack you think's in a strong box?
There's plenty of Cuban sugar, though.
Here's what happened. The general beat his friend Castro to the Cuban treasury. The strong box is now on this boat. So are a deported American gangster and his mall. And lurking in the depths is the creature from the haunted sea.
So because we're already here, the crew is here, we're having a great time. We rented a house on the beach outside of San Juan. And I called Chuck and I said, Chuck, here's the storyline. I made up the storyline. I said, Chuck, you've got 8 days to write this script. This will get it to me. Each picture was 2 weeks. This will get the script to me halfway through the second picture. My assistant will cast, get the locations, we'll finish shooting the second picture on Saturday and start shooting the third picture on Monday. I will have 1 day of preparation, but we'll have it all set. And he wrote the script, and actually, I told him how many actors we had. And he said, well, you can act. Why don't you play a little role? I said, fine, write something for me. He wrote for me the most complex part ever written, deliberately to get me. At one point, I was supposed to laugh hysterically. At another point, I was screaming with terror. At another point, I was attacking somebody. At another point, I was being attacked. And I read this thing and I said, there's no way I can direct the picture and do this acting job. So I drafted a young guy who'd was working on the crew who had done some acting in high school, Robert Bean, and I said, you play the role. All three pictures were surprisingly successful. So I was very pleased with the combination.
All right, so come back next time, or rather next decade, for part two of my interview with Roger Corman, recorded at the 2009 Festival of Fear.
People will always say, you know, well, what music do you like at the moment? And I would say,
I like to think everything is all right in my old house, my old dark house, but I know it isn't. I've always had bad feelings about all the garbage and dirt and darkness and spider webs and bad smells, and bad feelings scare you. Then as more time went on, I started thinking that maybe there could be weird things that could lay dormant in the old darkness of the old dark house. So I tried to think what these things could be. Then I got to thinking that maybe something had happened, something more than that they couldn't talk about. Something that they were too stupid to understand, and something they were too quiet of to be knowing of, that it was bad. And they just carried on their everyday life unthinking of anything different. What's happening? Oh my God. I know the hole in baby's head.
Taped into place. Close by is a timer that the vacuum cleaner is plugged into. Slowly the timer counts down to the point where it will eventually power up the vacuum, instantly sucking all the air from Harvey's lungs, leaving him desperately struggling against the relentless and unstoppable suction of a mad and merciless machine.
Strangest band, it's the Residents, newish tune from the Bunny Boy.
Yeah, oh, sure it is. Sick humor.
And now it's time to hop on over Boing, Boing, Boing style. See what's going on for the last time this year. Yeah, what are the latest horror happenings? Shannon, hey, Shannon.
So I went to Las Vegas, and all I could bring to him back was a dirty Vegas whore, but he seems happy about it. Merry Christmas, everybody. I'm Shannon Medaglia. Here is what's happening horror-wise from around the world. The Sacramento Horror Film Festival presents Repo the Genetic Opera live December 12th at the Colonial Theater in Sacramento. 25 Bones gets you a VIP package, which includes upfront seating, collector VIP pass, and an Amber Sweets t-shirt. Go to ambersweets.com for info. On the first Thursday of every month, Dapper Cadaver opens its studio prop shop to artists, painters, and sculptors for a free evening of anatomical drawing and still life with their unique collection of props and oddities. Bring your own art materials and check their calendar for other special events. It's 7572 San Fernando Road in Los Angeles. Go to dappercadaver.com for more. And the 2010 Erie Horror Film Festival and Screenplay Competition has officially opened its call for entries and is currently seeking submissions from all over the world. If you have horror, sci-fi, or a suspense-themed film, they want to see it, and you could be a part of the big festival in October of next year. Hurry up, though. The deadline is approaching quickly. For more details, go to ErieHorrorFilmFestival.com. And that is what's happening horror-wise. If you've got something you want to let the whole world know about, just send me an email, Shannon@RumorgRadio.com.
Thanks, Shannon. Yeah, the Dirty Vegas Horror is great, but I think you misunderstood what I wanted. I actually asked you for 30 Haggis from the floor. Yeah, Feedback's birthday's coming up, so, you know, it's a hard man to please.
Boom, roasted.
What? Haggis. Haggis? Haggis. Haggis? You say tomato, I say tomato, you say tomato, yada yada yada. Tons more Reward Radio show to go. Stay tuned, fiends.
Boom, roasted.
An unknown species of horror is born. As science fiction becomes science fact.
I've never seen anything like it.
One minute they weren't there, and the next minute they were everywhere.
An army of deadly predators searching, destroying anything in their path.
He's over at Colby's. He's found another 20 or 30 hills just like the one we burned.
Why did they come? What do they want?
The spiders in this area have organized themselves into an aggressive army.
A living, crawling hell on Earth. The Kingdom of the Spiders. A wild science fiction nightmare. Starring William Shatner, Tiffany Bowling, Woody Strode, and introducing Altavis Davis. Your nightmares will never be the same. Kingdom of the Spiders. The next victim could be you.
The night is my domain.
Hello, I'm Lisa Ladusar with your blood-spattered guide to music on Rumorg Radio. And this week, I talk to a real spider. Spider is the lead singer of Power Man 5000, that alt-metal band that's been around since the 1990s, making music inspired by robots, monsters, and other creatures from comic books. You might know Spider for his work on Fearnet and the fact that he's brothers with Rob Zombie.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie.
The band has a new record out called Somewhere on the Other Side of Nowhere. And with songs on it like Horror Show and Supervillain, I thought I should track this spider down in his lair and find out more about what's going on this record. Can I call you Spider?
That's what you call me. That's what everybody calls me, Spider, unless you're my mom. And then you have to use my secret name.
Michael?
All right, Spider. Thank you for joining us today on Rumorg Radio.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about the most recent album from Power Man 5000 called Somewhere on the Other Side of Nowhere. I think I would describe it as a party record for the last night on Earth.
I think that's exactly what it is, and I'm so glad that you get it. You know, I mean, that's pretty much how I describe it as well. I mean, there's no secret that, you know, a lot of my vibe in Power Man has been inspired by, you know, movies and pop culture and comics. I mean, I grew up as that kid, so I love when I can infuse my love of that stuff into the band.
Tell me how the concept for the album began. You always have an idea before you get started, and what did Godzilla have to do with any of it?
Well, Godzilla was a visual inspiration for the album, as was Ultraman and a lot of other ridiculous Japanese movies. You know, a lot of bands, I think, when they're making a record or writing a record, probably reference other bands' material. You know, like, let's put on this Metallica record and see if it sounds as good as that. You know, we were really interested in that. We would sit as we were writing music and have a TV next to the computer screen, and on continual loop were, you know, Godzilla films and Ultraman videos and all, you know. We would start on a piece of music and let it play and then look at the TV. And if it seemed like it made the visuals cooler or the visuals made the music sound cooler, we knew we were on to something.
What message were you trying to get out there? Were you trying to talk about the future or the present?
There's a string that sort of attaches all the songs over the years that I've written. And I feel like, I guess I've become, or at least I've tried to become, almost like the mouthpiece for the disenfranchised, you know, because I was that kid that got shit in school for, you know, being more into Star Trek than baseball, you know, and so I have this great affinity and, like, empathy for the weirdos of the world, you know, and in fact, this album, in a large part, was inspired by when I went to Comic-Con in San Diego in 2008. I was sort of at a, you know, maybe a sort of a low a point in terms of being inspired. And I went there and I just sort of reconnected with all that stuff that I grew up loving. And it really, it lit a fire under me to get this record done. And it made me realize sort of what was important. And the fact that those people that are into, you know, horror movies and sci-fi and comics are really love this band. You know, I would get recognized more at Comic-Con as Spider from Power Man than I do when I go to see a rock show, you know. So it was sort of like a bunch of light bulbs went off over my head, and it really inspired me to make this album.
You know, I recently subjected myself to watching Kiss Meets the Phantom.
Yeah, that was, you know, can I just say before you give your critique, I was the hugest Kiss fan as a kid. And I think I don't know how old I was when that movie came out. I was probably pretty young. And even as a young kid, I knew that was the end of Kiss for me when I watched that movie.
But they had superpowers.
They sure did, but, you know, it was a pretty limp superpower movie, you know.
Weird type of person. Wonder who could have done it.
Good question, Catman. What do you compute, Space Ace?
Insufficient data at the moment, Starchild.
We'd better look into it.
There's certain things that you shouldn't ever have to be subjected to, and one is maybe Ace Frehley's real speaking voice, you know?
Boom! Roasted!
Insufficient data at the moment, Starchild!
I want to talk about a few specific tracks off of your new album. Of course, it closes with a tune called Horror Show. We've talked about monsters and sci-fi and comics and all those things that you're interested in. I'm curious, you know, how horror plays into your life now. Are you trying to make things that are scary? Because like we said, Power Man 5000 is a fun band. Do you like to scare people as well or freak people out?
You know, there is, for Power Man anyway, it definitely leans much more, in an odd way, heroic. You know, you know, maybe I'm Flash Gordon and, you know, Rob was Ming the Merciless growing up.
Who are you?
Flash Gordon, quarterback, New York Jets.
Pathetic earthlings, hurling your bodies out into the void without the slightest inkling of who or what is out here. If you had known anything about the true nature of the universe, anything at all, you would have hidden from it in terror.
One of my favorite things to watch on YouTube, or I just constantly search for videos of people scaring other people. One of my favorite things to watch. It's just, I find it endlessly fascinating and funny to watch people get the crap scared out of them. Beautiful.
Hey, what's up, y'all? It's Flash Jackson. I'm here with my boys Thrusty and Logue going to the bowling alley to work on our scores and see if we scared the shit out of some people. Come on, y'all. Check it out. He's going to try to go over and scare this fat man. Let's see if he gets his ass kicked.
The new album, Somewhere on the Other Side of Nowhere, is in stores now. Watch the band's MySpace for new dates in the new year. And that will close out the programming season of the Blood Spattered Guide. I wish you merry, ho-ho, horrible holidays wherever you are. And I'm going to give myself a present and pick the Power Man 5000 song, about vampires. This is V is for Vampire on Rumorg Radio.
We arranged for several of you to kill each other so that we could take over your bodies. No, never.
Nobody loves you when your skin is so pale and your teeth are getting sharper than your black fingernails. Nobody needs you when your eyes turn wide and the light of day can keep you up all night. Because V is for vampire, V is for blood. So give me your money, I'll give you my love. V is for vampire, V is for blood. So give me your money, I'll give you my love. When your heart turns black and you're looking at yourself, but you ain't looking back. You can't die when you're already dead. So forget about forgiveness, forget what they said. Because B is for vampire, B is for blood. So give me your money, I'll give you my love. B is for vampire, B is for blood. So give me your money, I'll give you my love. Come on.
Plain suicide.
No, it's a rational transaction. One life for billions.
Hi, this is Rodrigo Gudino, the president of Rumorg.
I'm Lisa Ladusar.
I'm Gary Pullen.
I'm Dustin Erickson.
I'm Monica S. Kubler.
I'm Dave Alexander, and...
We come for your children.
That wasn't very Christmassy.
Jim Carrey. In a new vision of the classic tale. Like you've never seen it before.
What's happening?
In Disney Digital 3D and IMAX 3D. Disney's A Christmas Carol.
Positive critics.
Controversial. Unrelenting. It's brutal. It's nasty.
Sensational.
The worst of the worst.
Offend everyone equally.
Boring.
They're real.
This stuff shit scrapes off the bottom of its shoes.
They're mean.
So what was the actor's name?
Oh, God, what a plank he is.
They're here.
Are you ready? It's time for the Cosmic Critics.
All right, this is Feedback.
And this is Last Chance Lance.
And this week, we're going to talk about Robert Zemeckis's... Is that, I don't even know the correct way to pluralize them.
Zemeckis.
A Christmas Carol.
Which I got to admit, when you first told me that we were going to do this, I thought it was a joke.
Bull, roasted.
I got to admit, when I first suggested it to you, I thought it was a joke. And this is the animated 3D movie that's currently in theaters now.
I didn't know it was animated. I did not know it was animated, but even when I was starting to watch it, and then I was thinking, wow, they did some really cool makeup on Jim Carrey. And
are you kidding?
Did
you miss Beowulf?
Beowulf, for the first fucking hour I was watching it, I thought it was real.
I did Beowulf.
And I wear glasses, and I had
my
glasses.
It's this weird kind of photorealistic CG type of effect that Zemeckis has been really pioneering in this film.
And it works.
Beowulf. And some people really detest the style. They don't jibe with the aesthetic of it at all. Me, I really like it.
I really like it.
And I think one of the great things it allows for, and Zemeckis takes full advantage of, is by creating this photorealistic world, but it's disembodied from any kind of physical laws of our world, the camera is free to basically go ballistic.
Oh yeah,
and
it
that's
must be,
what it does in this
It must
movie.
Be incredible to not have any restrictions like that. You know, if the guys are storyboarding or blocking whatever, they're just like, well, we can just do whatever the fuck we want because we don't have to worry about setting the camera in place and having crew
exactly.
and everything.
And it's nonstop. And it basically, it's just so beautifully orchestrated. I thought visually this is a masterwork.
Yeah.
So I'm watching the movie and it just kind of occurred to me while I'm watching it. It's like, we've got to review it on the show. First of all, the Charles Dickens tale is one of the classic ghost stories of all time. It's been adapted a million times. I think the version most people love
the Muppets, the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Exactly.
Come on, man.
No, Bill Murray's Scrooge.
Scrooge is a great movie, too.
The Alistair Sim classic.
Yeah, 1938.
I think it's the 40s.
Pretty
there
sure
was one in the 30s. That
oh,
was
it
English,
a different one? Okay. It is.
There's many adaptations.
It's one that we grew up with as kids.
I love it, too. I love seeing it every year. And I fucking hate Christmas, as people who have listened to this show for longer than 12 months know. But I do like A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And I thought the sequence with Christmas Yet to Come, which is the scary part of the story, is horrific.
Well, that's the thing. This is a
horrific.
Scary movie.
It's
and
scary.
When I was in the theater, people had kids, and the kids were scared, man. They were scared. I was thinking, I probably would take my kids to a movie like that if I had them, and I never will. But
I wouldn't take them if they were younger. I have a couple of nieces.
But I didn't know it was going to be scary. That's when I went there. And
too
then,
scary for kids.
No, totally.
What do you want with me?
You will be haunted by three spirits. I'd rather not.
No,
it's a PG?
It's a PG. It
shouldn't
be a
PG movie, man.
Well,
all it needed was sex, and it would have been like...
It's a Disney Christmas movie that's too horrific to take your kids to. And the funny thing is, I was surprised to see that reviews for this movie were so split. If you go on Rotten Tomatoes, it doesn't get an overall good rating.
Sorry, Rotten what?
You say tomato.
I totally say tomato, man.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
I can't believe you said that. That's incredible.
Potato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
So, you've totally thrown me off here. I'm trying to,
we're talking
express
about
express my enthusiasm and surprise enthusiasm for this film.
Surprising enthusiasm.
You know, when you see Disney, you expect the worst and
unbridled enthusiasm.
Unbridled enthusiasm.
Like I said, you go over to Rotten Tomatoes and you'll see that the reviews are split. A lot of the really wimpy reviewers are complaining that it isn't warm and syrupy and icky enough, and it's too scary for kids and blah blah. It's like, fuck you, man. That's what makes this cool.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? And it really doesn't play up a maudlin sensibility. It's kind of very restrained. It never panders to a low-level mentality of the audience. There's no fart jokes. There's no pop culture references. Zemeckis set out to make a classic, and I think he did. It's a reverential adaptation of the tale, with taking full advantage of the kind of the novelty technology of the 3D. It's one of the most awesome 3D movies I've ever seen.
I kept my glasses from that one too. You're not supposed to, but I did.
Well, you do that every time.
I do that. I
must have
like 20.
A stack of like three. That's a weird thing, but I couldn't imagine anybody even, definitely not doing a better job. I mean, he's unrecognizable in it, his voice for the most part, and it's amazing. It's so wonderfully resonant and theatrical.
Oh yeah, well, if you ever
every
saw,
moment is just perfect.
If you ever saw A Series of Unfortunate Events where he actually does that, but he does the costumes and the whole look as well. Jim Carrey is a talented guy, and this is one of those ones where he was able to actually flex his acting muscle, but through his voice. And it does a superb job. Now, there's lots of other, you know, actors in it. We have got Gary Oldman in there, Bob Hoskins.
Colin Firth. Carrie Elwes is a little
Yeah, which was a bit. Weird choice, but...
Mommy, isn't that the guy from Saw?
You know, like, come on.
No, that will never be uttered by anybody.
Are there rocks ahead?
If they are, they all be dead.
No more rhymes now, I mean it!
Anybody want a peanut?
But listen, don't be put off by Disney. Don't be put off by the PG rating. Don't be put off by Jim Carrey. Go and check this out in 3D. It's phenomenal, and it's a beautifully horrific way to spend the holidays.
Oh,
and that's
well
it. We're
said.
Out of time.
Okay, well, everybody.
And that is it for the decade.
It is. We move into 2010. We've got two more years until the world dies and disappears, buddy.
Wow. Bring it on.
Okay, well, Merry Christmas.
I want to go to there.
I'm dreaming of a wine.
Thou's King Diamond, no presents for Christmas. Yeah, I didn't play a lot of Christmas music this year for the big last show, Fiends. I just can't do it, I'm not into it, I'm with feedback. I feel like a goddamn alien. Hey, we're back January 8th, right here, online, broadcasting from Rumorg Radio as we do. You can stalk me over the holidays on Twitter at Tomb, DRAGOMIR, if you dare. Oh.
May you be damned! For all eternity be damned! Our bodies may be destroyed, but our avenging spirits will persecute you forever! You yourself, your own incarnation, will bring us back from the grave! We shall return soon to take vengeance upon you! May you be cursed! May a curse be upon you all!
Here's Wall of Voodoo, the hoodoo that you do, yeah, right where we'll be. January 8th, Rumorg Radio returns. Stay tuned, yeah, all right. Back in flesh.
Someone smash my alarm, it's got me on the edge, you know it's so sharp. You know I won't go, you know I won't go, I don't wanna go.
You won't go.
The corporation's boiling over, everybody's taking over. And I'm back in flesh, back in flesh, back in flesh, back in flesh, back in flesh. You better sign your time card now. They don't care about you anyhow. Sign in your minimum cut. Then later get your salaries cut. The edge, you know it's so sharp. And you know I won't go. You know I won't go. I don't wanna go.
You won't go.
The corporation's boiling over, everybody's taking over. And I'm back in flesh, back in flesh, back in flesh, back in flesh, back in flesh. I won't go.
You won't go.
Now a very special Christmas poem.
'Twas the month before Christmas, and all through the morgue, not a creature was stirring, not even a dirty Vegas whore. The eyeballs were hung by the coffin with care, in hopes that Saint Rodrigo would soon be there. The children all nestled, all snug in their pews, while visions of leprechauns danced in their shoes.
Exeter, Flexeter, fee-fi-fo-flacker, you've been a dance with the last Chrissy Shacker.
Damn! his kerchief and me in my cap while we both settle down for a nice winter's crap.
Ew! What smells like boot feet?
And out in the street there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the toilet to see what's the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore at the shutters and barfed up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of corpses to objects below. But what through my wandering eyes should appear but a black shiny hearse with 8 tiny beers? With a little old driver so lively like Devo, I knew in a moment it was St. Rodrigo. More rapid than zombies, his werewolves they came. He whistled and bristled and called them by name. Now Lisa, now Stuart, now Justin, now Vixen. On Keeksa, on Jessa, on Gary, on Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the tip of my bladder. This poem is lame. Here's glass being shattered. Christmas, adios.
He's gone!
Gentlemen, let's close up for Christmas.
That wasn't very Christmassy.
Damn right. Anybody want a peanut? Yeah!